Welcome to the Superconscious Success Podcast, where Jen and her Superconscious Success Family co-hosts bring you valuable content each and every week on topics relating to manifestation, spirituality, and most of all, using your superconscious to manifest success in all areas of your life. Now on to today's episode.
Hey there, Superconscious Success fam. Welcome back to another episode where we are going to continue our book, Napoleon Hill, Grow Rich with Peace of Mind. Now, although this book is not one of his most popular or most well-known books, I am finding it absolutely fascinating and I'm really enjoying reading it to you. I think you'll get a lot out of it because, as we know, Napoleon Hill is one of the forerunners of the personal development era. And so he has a lot of great knowledge to instill upon people. Now, this particular chapter is called When You Are Free of Fear, You Are Free to Live. It goes over the seven most common fears that we all deal with and how we can start to overcome those particular fears. This is a really important chapter for you to listen to because until we eliminate fear, it's very difficult for us to get into that state of love and manifest all that it is that we desire. Now, as you know, if you want the summaries of this particular chapter, head across to superconsciousSuccess.com/innercircle and sign up for that membership where you will get free access to all of the summaries plus free courses that I create plus a whole lot more. So head across there and do that. If you're looking for spiritual coaching, as I've mentioned, then I am now available to do spiritual coaching for you. So all you have to do is head across to spiritualcoachjenmatthews.com and you'll be able to sign up there. Anyway, let's get into this chapter. When you are free of fear, you're free to live. Free yourself of fear and you free yourself of a man-made devil. Seven major fears reinforce each other. The fear of poverty, the fear of criticism, the fear of ill health, the fear of loss of love, the fear of loss of liberty, the fear of old age, and the fear of death. Separate your self-made fears from the fears which are necessary for self-preservation. Make way for self-confident faith in yourself, the indispensable ingredient of a life worth living. When you fear something, that thing is more likely to find you and harm you. When you look a threat in the eye and know you are going to overcome it, that is when great powers come to your aid. Fear, the most powerful of negative motives, is like prayer in reverse. Instead of appealing to the constructive forces which surround us, it appeals to the forces of destruction. It becomes a god in itself, demanding endless painful sacrifices. People rarely will admit that lives of bitter privation may be founded on nothing more than constant fear, and yet you can see it happen all around you. The first fear I shall mention is a terribly magnetic fear. The more of it you have, the more you are likely to attract. And this is the fear of poverty. Now and again, I've had occasion to meet people I knew in my own poverty-stricken youth. Of late, I've been meeting their now-grown children. When I have known both parent and child, I often can trace the persistence of a kind of family fondness for poverty. Fearing poverty with good reason as it ground them down, hating it and protesting it, families have nevertheless allowed their negative emotions to dull their wits and cancel their courage. In the greatest nation in the world, a nation that fairly throbs with opportunity, they settle down to live in want. Some member of the family may make some gesture towards lifting himself out of his rut, but it always turns out to be a feeble gesture that lacks follow-through. Perhaps it salves his conscience to have this gesture to point to for the rest of his life. Worse yet, whole families are brought up in the belief that God intended them to be poor. Surely it must be the final twist of fear which equates the idea of God with the idea of persecution. To be poor and not to like being poor is a good step towards becoming rich. But put aside your fear of poverty. See it rather as merely that point from which you take off. Let your intimate knowledge of the unwanted condition become a sustaining force as you drive towards the condition you do want, prosperity, even opulence. Let your present necessity for pinching pennies make you aware of the power of money. Let your lack of capital make you aware of the many ways you may use other people's money merely by paying them a fair fee for their money's hire. Know that much education is free, that self-education in some fields can be better than school education, that vast stores of information may be used free, that industry and trade stands with open arms to receive the willing worker. Know that our economy is so vast and various that any special talent can find the place where it is needed, and our economy is filled with unmet needs which you can meet. I forbear from giving you a list of the many well-known men who began their lives in poverty. We have met many of them and shall meet others. Cast out fear of poverty and drive ahead. The second fear is the fear of criticism. Your mind has limitless power to make a dream come true, provided you allow your mind to work unhampered. Few fears hamper a mind so quickly as the fear of criticism. It can stop you before you get started, and yet is nothing but the influence of another mind or other minds. A negative influence which often is only imagined. A person who is filled with fear of criticism often will not pour forth his ideas lest he be rebuffed, and so he loses his great gifts of imagination and self-reliance. We may examine the careers of men who achieved mighty breakthroughs in their fields, and we may marvel at the way in which they found their abilities and put them to effective use. At the same time, we may see many of the obstacles they had to overcome. Rarely, however, do we know of the adverse criticism many such men faced. Had they feared this criticism and let it take root in their minds, all their ability to conceive and achieve might have been crippled. Indeed, they never might have felt it, for their minds would not have been free minds that drive ahead. The automobile, of course, would not work, nor would the aeroplane, nor would space travel. By the time Henry Ford was ready to manufacture automobiles on a mass production basis, the automobile obviously worked, but mass production of such tricky devices was sneered at. They were a laboratory curiosity. Nobody could supply the gasoline necessary, nor the rubber, nor ensure that such necessities would be available to a motorist wherever he might travel. Furthermore, said the bankers with whom Henry Ford preferred not to do business, people simply would not buy such a high-priced gadget in sufficient quantities. Almost everyone who knew of Ford's plan condemned them on one ground or another. Surely the sustaining power of love helped Ford to know his own mind, for Mrs. Ford said simply, "Go ahead, no matter who criticizes." More recently, a man named Henry Land took a photograph of his young daughter. She wanted to see the picture right away. He explained that first the roll of photographic paper must be taken out of the camera and developed in a darkroom by means of certain chemicals. Once the negatives were obtained, they had to be printed by intense light upon another kind of paper, which in its turn needed chemical treatment. And so, at length, pictures would appear. At this point, his unhampered mind took hold. Why not build a camera which produced finished pictures? Anyone who knew anything about photography could have given him a dozen reasons why not. But criticism did not stay the development of the Land Polaroid camera, which does exactly what young Miss Land requested. Criticism cripples as well in the realm of pure ideas. When I set out to organise the science of personal achievement, I was almost snowed under by the criticism heaped upon my head. Most of the criticism came from my nearest relatives, and this is hard to take. I could not then have put in words the power that kept me going, but I had my mind upon my goal, not upon obstacles, and I kept going. This first practical science of personal achievement has earned more money for its users than was contained in Andrew Carnegie's entire fortune, and he was very likely the world's richest man. It is one thing to listen to advice from a person qualified to give advice. It is quite another to allow adverse criticism to blunt the fine edge of your own conquering mind. Notice how much of such criticism comes from people who criticize everything, in particular from people who criticize everybody who tries to succeed. Failure, like other forms of misery, loves company. Cast out fear of criticism and drive ahead. The third one is the fear of ill health. Probably you know more than one person whose main topic of conversation is health, or rather ill health. Such people would rather describe their operations than talk of the benefit they derived, if indeed they needed the operations in the first place. They start each day by searching for symptoms, first from the hair down and then from the toes up, and will find many a sure sign of illness with which to bore their friends. They buy every quack remedy that comes along, follow every health fad 1 year which turns out to be an anti-health fad the next year. They are hypochondriacs, they imagine illness, fear illness, and literally bring illness upon themselves, for such is the negative power of the mind. In my 60-odd years of adulthood, I have been gratified to see that physicians give increasing attention to psychosomatic illness, or bodily illness which originates in the mind. Since man's earliest history, however, it has been obvious that almost all of our illness is caused by unpeace of mind. Here is a very partial list of symptoms which can arise from mental conflicts, fears and tensions. Headache, indigestion, ulcers, arthritic pains, constant fatigue, sleeplessness, slow healing of wounds, kidney trouble, circulatory trouble, frigidity, impotence, rashes and other skin afflictions, mouth infection, rectal disorders, muscular cramps and more and more and more. Then there are the many mental disorders ranging from extreme nervous tension to outright insanity, which often are caused or aggravated by a mind which fights itself. The list of ills to which body and mind may yield is almost endless. So let your first step towards good health be this: do not dwell upon the image of illness. The mind tends to transmute all belief into their physical equivalent. Why then see yourself as anything but a person who enjoys good sound health from top to toe and back again? Even if you do contract some illness or injury, hold to the peaceful knowledge that it is merely an adverse incident of life, which of course you will overcome. Moreover, a mind filled with faith and confidence can better see beyond a disability to the healed condition, the yes condition, and this above all is a healing aid which cannot be supplied by medicine. It is conceived, and therefore it is boundlessly powerful. Faith is the greatest of all healers. Faith is the great universal medicine which prevents illness, cures illness, builds a resistance to further illness, heals and sustains. Have faith in your health, and it is as though ill health starves to death for lack of food. Keep ill health out of your conversation. Keep ill health out of your mind. Reflect your faith in the image of a prince of sound physical health, and that prince stands by almost invincible. Then, to prove conclusively that you have stopped believing in ill health, empty your medicine chest down the drain. Cast out fear of ill health and drive ahead. Fourth fear is the fear of the loss of love. Love walks hand in hand with peace of mind. A couple who truly love one another often reflect that love upon the world like a beacon of happiness. They belong to each other, we say, and in many ways they do. Yet look beyond the trite statement and you'll see that belonging is not the same as selfishly possessing. One who really loves another does not hold his mate in chains of jealousy, for this is fear, fear of the loss of love. True love knows no fear. Moreover, love cannot be demanded, it must be given. Should it cease to be given, it no longer exists. The end of love is not pleasant. No adverse circumstances is pleasant when it occurs. Yet to fear it in advance, as many do, is as damaging as to imagine oneself dead in advance of dying. A particular person's love may be lost, but love itself never is lost. The capacity for love beats with the heart. It seeks another, and love for one person always can be transmuted into love for another. Know that there is another. Know too that love also transmutes itself into great achievement and great service. Charles Dickens' first love almost ended in tragedy when he found it was not reciprocated. He transmuted his love into his writing, and his most popular book, David Copperfield, arose from a heart which seemed to be broken. Love generously, love fully, love faithfully. Love is a great power for good when you get it, but love can destroy you when it gets you. Do you think I am cynical in talking thus of the most sublime of all emotions? No, I am following the purpose of this book and showing you the lessons of life itself. Any fear holds you back and hurts you. Cast out fear of loss of love and drive ahead. Okay, the fifth fear is the fear of the loss of liberty. I read recently about a man who had served a term in prison and had been released. He had difficulty in finding a job, for he was honest enough to say he was an ex-convict. He was for a time unable to come home to his family, for they mistrusted him. Within time, however, he knew he was a changed man, and with quiet persistence, he has won back a place in the world of honest people. He expressed his thankfulness at having regained the privileges of working for a living, of planning a career, of having a family and a home. But all these blessings have their foundation in a greater blessing, he said. I have my liberty. Millions have learned what happens when an entire nation loses its liberty. The necessities of life may all be present, and many of the luxuries, but without the liberty to speak one's mind and live one's own life, all the rest seems a mockery. I recall a group of men and women who crossed the ocean in a tiny, unseaworthy boat and nearly drowned several times in order to win their way to our land of liberty. This sailing craft began its voyage with two masts, and at one port of call, they sold one mast in order to buy provisions. Yet still they struggled onward to find liberty. And I know of many who have given up so much liberty of body and mind that they might as well be in prison or living under a dictator. Also, I know many others who so constantly fear the loss of liberty that the fear itself becomes a fetter on their souls, as is the case with fear of any kind. When I speak of freedom of mind and body, I speak of a basic personal freedom. It is not a physically absolute freedom. If each of us were absolutely free to do whatever we wanted to do, we would have chaos instead of civilization. Peace of mind includes going along with the laws and customs of our times and our society. It also includes a balanced view towards any temporary loss of freedom. A little while ago, I suffered a temporary loss of liberty to get about as I wish. A light case of influenza sneaked past my prince of sound physical health and sent me to bed for 3 days. I could have fretted about the appointments I had to cancel, but if I had, my mind would have lost its liberty. Instead, I devoted the time to peacefully and restfully outlining this book. It had been a task which I'd been getting around to for a long time. Once again, I prove the soundness of the principle that every adversity carries within it the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit. The concept of time is closely allied to the concept of freedom. Time is wealth, and unlike money, when it is gone, you cannot replace it. Many a man who arrives promptly for an appointment only to be kept waiting, or who is stuck in a traffic jam, gets into a stew over this infringement of his right to spend his time as he wishes to spend it. I have pointed out to salesmen that time spent in an anteroom can be time spent in reviewing one's sales pointers and thus be the better prepared for selling. Or in many cases, the time may be spent in observing and listening so that one gathers useful information about the customer's needs. For a salesman or anyone else, enforced waiting time can be transmuted into a time of quiet relaxation, which restores the strength of mind and body. Even a driver in a traffic jam can keep his mind peaceful and thoughtful, and it is often on such occasions, while one is alert but not heavily concentrating, that the subconscious mind feeds back the answers to questions and problems, which may have lain within it a long time. Peace of mind is a many splendid thing. Now, connected with the statement you read a moment ago, time is wealth, and unlike money, when it is gone, you cannot replace it. Peace of mind is so beneficial to your entire well-being, however, that it is almost certain to extend your life and help you keep active and productive far into your later years. So that lost time can, in a sense, be replaced, and at a most valuable period. Liberty includes peace of mind. Peace of mind is a basic liberty. We have too many slaves to the clock, too many slaves to the bank book, too many slaves to convention and to self-consciousness. Before you say, "I am free," see if you answer yes to these questions. When circumstances require me to use my time in a way I did not plan to use it, do I, in that time, know my own mind and use it beneficially? Have I set up my work schedule so that I need not live in fear of work overwhelming me and stealing my hours of rest? When I find a way to express myself and know it is socially acceptable, do I continue to express myself in that manner even though others may think it's strange? Have I freed myself of any family or regional or cultural custom which has hampered my career or my personal life? Am I willing to question the ways in which other people do things and never make an absolute guide out of that's the way it is done? And do I realize I'm not working for money, but for that which money can buy? If you honestly answer yes to all of these questions, you are essentially a free person, and you do not fear the loss of freedom. You know that freedom cannot be taken away from the soul. Notice the last question especially. When I become aware of the drives which enable men to make great fortunes, I also became aware that some rich men do not have peace of mind. An appreciation of money is a far cry from the worship of money, which in the end destroys happiness. Remember, this book shows you how to grow rich and have peace of mind. Liberty extends in many directions. Those who fear slavery are the ones who have made themselves slaves, for they have conditioned themselves to it, and they know how defenseless they have become. Cast out fear of loss of liberty and drive ahead. Okay, so fear number 6 is fear of old age. I used to be a good amateur shortstop, mourns a man of 75, and now I couldn't stop a grounder that was rolling more than 1 mile an hour. Such remarks are typical of those who fear old age and so cannot know peace of mind in the years which should be most rewarding. Old age is a handicap, yes, but only in connection with certain types of physical motion. Nature never takes away anything without replacing it with something of equal potential value. When nature takes away youth, she replaces it with wisdom. It is impossible for a young person to possess the accumulated wisdom and experience of a person of ripe age. Think that over before you say old age is a drawback. It is pathetic to see people assume extra handicaps because they are past 40 or past 50 or even past 70, when these handicaps exist only in their own minds. They show an inferiority complex, allow younger people's thinking to overwhelm their own mature and experienced backed thinking. They apologize for being old as though living past youth were a disgrace. They do not expect to feel the impulses of initiative, imagination, and self-reliance, and so of course they don't feel these so-called youthful qualities. They act as though losing youth springy muscles must mean you lose the power inside your head. This is so only if you wish it, only if you fear old age. Recently, I set up an entirely new series of schools in several cities where men of all ages can learn the art of positive thinking and how to use it to achieve success. Is it odd that a man of my age should embark upon such an enterprise? Only to a fearful, hampered mind is odd. While I remain in direction, I can hire younger, more active men to do the legwork. In fact, I can do a better job of such direction than I could have done 40 years ago. I have that much more experience. Also, I have peace of mind in depth, as I did not have it 40 years ago, when I did not yet completely see the forces which make men what they are. Part of the fear of old age with many people stems from the feeling that an old person inevitably must miss a great deal. You cannot partake in so much that is going on. Because of this, some people of ripe years attempt to masquerade as youth and only succeed in being ridiculous. It is not necessary to partake physically of the entire world around you, so long as you keep in touch with that world. Every few years we see an advance in the means of communication, so that the affairs of all the world can be brought into the living room. Surely the neighbours of my youth would have been less ignorant and superstitious if they had had today's opportunities to know what's going on. To keep yourself in tune with youthful states of mind, however, I invite you to make use of a procedure I've found very useful. Every year I subtract 1 year at the time of my birthday. Then I pay particular attention to the aspects of the world which appeal to a person of that age. I'm now back in my late 20s, renewing my acquaintance with my state of mind in that era, and also with much that is unique with the present late 20s generation. Viewing as I do from the vantage point of experience, I have doubled fun, and at the same time I gain a perspective on myself as a younger person might see me. The experience is both valuable and delightful. Look deeply into your own vast experience, refresh your deep knowledge of human nature, find and feel the positive forces which never are out of reach. Old age can be the greatest time of your life. Cast out fear of old age and drive ahead. And then the seventh fear is, of course, the fear of death. My father tried to fill me with the fear of fire and brimstone, which would be my lot after death. In fact, he tried to beat the fear into me. Fortunately, it never took hold, even though such a dismal belief was fostered by our local church. If you have to rise above your religion in order to rid yourself of the fear of death, then rise above. Nobody has the right to tell you that his way is the way to enjoy yourself after you die. You need only to look down the street where another group of people is being assured that another way is the only way. Again, you may believe, as I do, that nothing you do in your lifetime has any effect upon what the life spirit may experience or where it may go after death. And it is still a belief and no more. It is, however, a belief which helps you considerably in living a good, useful, hearty, happy life right now and enjoying every bit of it. As for your being honest and helpful with your fellow men so that they too may enjoy living, this is part of your peace of mind, part of your success in living. During my entire life, I never have sought anyone's opinion about anything unless I had reason to believe that another person knew more about a subject than I did. I have found many opinions about what happens after death, but I never have found anyone who knew anything about the subject. Shall I fear death then, merely because it is unknown? No, I shall remind myself that there are two types of circumstances. Type 1 is the kind of circumstance which one may control, modify, or avoid. This type is worthy of one's attention. Type 2 consists of circumstances which cannot control, of which death is the prime example. I shall therefore do what I can do to remain in good health and good spirits, avoid obvious threats to life, and in other ways make logical use of the motive of self-preservation. But as for giving a second thought to death itself, why worry about the uncontrollable? You wish to provide that your money or property goes to your loved ones after you die? Very well, this is controllable. We do not delude ourselves into thinking we will not die. Yet having mastered the philosophy which accepts death as inevitable and which makes no false attempt to see what lies beyond the veil we cannot penetrate, you will fear nothing. Your mind will turn from death to life, from no to yes, from guesses to realities. Cast out the fear of death and drive ahead. Man was made to live in full possession of himself. Whoever created man gave this wonderful new creature a possession not shared by any other creature, the possession of his own mind. Along with this, the unknown creator provided that man be capable of fear, because justified fear is a part of self-preservation. One who meets a tiger on a jungle trail and has no weapon in his hand is well advised to be fearful and to take immediate measures towards his self-preservation. Likewise, do we exercise caution in any circumstance of inherent danger? The motorist, one hopes, drives with attention to the rules of safety. The child is taught to look both ways before he crosses the street. Self-made fears, however, are another story. Apparently, man's mind must also be capable of entertaining self-made fear, or else it could not have as great breadth of creativeness. Yet, both through the study of psychology and through common sense observation, we see that self-made fears are unhealthful and damaging. Being in full possession of your own mind, you can free yourself of this kind of fear. When you relate yourself properly to life, you have no need for such fears and no occasion in which to suffer them. I repeat, if you have to rise above your religion in order to rid yourself of fear, go ahead and rise above it. Along with this, if you have to become bigger than your local folkways to rid yourself of fear, go ahead and rise above them. If you have to rid yourself of certain people's company in order to rise above your fear, go ahead and rid yourself of such company, knowing the world is full of people who are better employers or better customers or better friends for you. You will take drastic steps to get rid of any poison that found its way into your food, so let it be with fear, the mind poison. Fear is the tool of a man-made devil. Self-confident faith in oneself is both the man-made weapon which defeats this devil and the man-made tool which builds a triumphant life. And it is more than that. It is a link to the irresistible forces of the universe which stand behind a man who does not believe in failure and defeat as being anything but temporary experiences. Again, the supreme secret has beckoned to you. When at last I give it to you beyond question, you will not be surprised. So there we go. We all know that we deal with fear on a daily basis. Many of us do, and probably most of us do, fear something or other. Fear of poverty is so common in today's society that we're all stressing about money, and to the point that we actually start to worship money. And we're going to go into in the future chapters how worshipping money is actually the worst thing that you can do, and it actually stops it from coming to you. So we need to really look at these fears that I've spoken about, the fear of poverty, the fear of loss of love, the fear of, you know, I suppose freedom or liberty, you know, the fear of ill health. How many of us worry that we're going to get sick? Back in my day, I was actually a hypochondriac years and years and years ago, and I managed to move past that. But it is a constant fear that you're going to get sick, a constant fear that you're going to die. And so I think that it's something that we need to get in control, and we're able to, and listen to the rest of this book, because it is going to be absolutely fantastic. I'm really enjoying this. I hope that you're enjoying it too. And like I said, remember to go across to superconsciousssuccess.com/innercircle and sign up for the free membership, because then you can get all of the amazing summaries which can summarize the entire chapters. So thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here, and I look forward to speaking to you in the next episode.